Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today, a look ahead to the Heartland Gaming Expo. According to a VSS investment report, the average American now spends over 23 minutes a day playing video games, making it fifth in media usage in America behind television, radio, and the internet, but ahead of newspapers, magazines, and mobile media. In 2013, the global video game industry generated over $93 billion in revenue. And gaming startup companies are growing here in Tulsa and across the state. Roger Mailer is the man behind the Heartland Gaming Expo, which takes place this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, at the Cox Business Center. There'll be speakers from the industry speaking about various aspects of the gaming industry, a variety of game manufacturers with demonstrations of their latest games, tournaments for spectators, as well as a gaming competition for a variety of student groups from high schools and colleges in all phases of game design. There'll also be a 24-hour code jam where groups of designers will create a video game from scratch during a 24-hour period. And all of that's available for spectators. There'll be plenty of games to play on and demonstrations throughout the weekend. You can learn more about the expo at their website, heartlandgamingexpo.com. Roger Mailer is an associate professor of computer science at the University of Tulsa and one of the principals of the university's new degree program in computer simulation and video gaming. And he joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Roger Mailer, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, good morning.
Busy week for you heading into the Heartland Gaming Expo. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But as a computer science professor, one of your areas is in computer simulation and game design. How big is the video game industry today? I mean, it's got to be huge. I mean, I keep hearing these huge numbers associated with it.
Well, the gaming industry at large is something, last I heard, was like $66 billion a year. So it's actually dwarfing the movie industry at this point. Now, within Oklahoma, what we're seeing is it's starting to grow. So we're seeing a bunch of studios that are starting up in Oklahoma City. We're seeing a few starting up here in Tulsa. And certainly Tulsa is recognizing that this is an up-and-coming industry in the local area and done a lot to try to support it.
This is sort of a nascent little industry in northeastern Oklahoma today. We've had some other trends like in telecom and things like that. And a lot of the companies that would come in here found it was much better to go to the coast, to the Silicon Valley, where there's a lot of great graduates for the jobs, and also just to market and be near the sort of the center of the industry. Is that sort of diffusing in gaming today?
I think it is, because especially the smaller shops, they're finding that the overheads associated with being on one of the coasts are so high that they can produce games, a lot better games, for a lot cheaper in places that are in, you know, the center of the country, where cost of living is low, but the technology availability is still quite high, and there's a growing strong labor force. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the labor force that we saw on the coast were actually students from places like Texas, like Oklahoma, like Illinois, that were basically moving because that's where they felt the opportunities were. So as we grow more, I think we'll see a lot more talent around
and
here.
And correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of these studios now, it's really based around a really small creative team. They develop a group of other creative people around them. And it doesn't matter where they are anywhere. I mean, there's Shreveport, Tulsa, Oklahoma City, all sorts of cities around the country, right?
Yeah, there are like Dallas is really big. Austin is huge in the gaming industry, and it all revolves around the early 90s when Doom came out and Quake. Uh-huh. So that industry is...
For those who are not familiar with Doom and Quake, these are two very, very popular video games, right?
Right. In fact, they kind of revolutionized the industry, and we saw these companies taking a risk when they first put them out, small companies in Austin. We're also seeing this change in the way that things are being done in the gaming industry. And so far, it's mirrored the way the movie industry works, where the big movie producing companies go out to the small people who film the movies and actually manage the creation of the movies. And then you see movie projects get started, they get dropped. The same thing was happening in the game industry. You have big players like Epic and EA and Blizzard, who are basically the producers. And then they're actually farming the work off to smaller game companies distributed all over the country. What we're seeing now is that the small game companies are actually trying to stand up on their own and become producers of their own games using the Kickstarter revolution, so online crowdfunding.
I would think mobile technology and all the various platforms basically create a new opportunity as well, because you know, in the old days when it was all based on game consoles or computer consoles, that was sort of a limited market, and probably those producers had a better effective control of the process. Has that changed now?
No, it has. Like the introduction of mobile apps, for instance, you have a kid out in Vietnam producing Flappy Birds and overnight becoming a millionaire, right? The technology is also more freely available. So Unity and Unreal, which are two really powerful, popular game design engines, just announced that they're providing it for free. And so that shatters the whole motif which we had prior, where in order to get a hold of one of these engines to produce a top quality game, you had to come up with $1 million. And it cut basically everybody out of the market from being able to produce these top quality games.
And now you have open sourcing, and so it's going to be the Wild West, right?
Absolutely, and we're going to see huge numbers of games from that.
Now, how many businesses are there in Oklahoma devoted to gaming and simulations? Now, when you get into simulations, that's a whole other ball game because you have the aircraft simulators business, and I assume that's sort of related in a way, isn't it?
It is very related. So Flight Safety and SimStar are two of our biggest sponsors for the Heartland, and I know we're going to talk a little bit about the Heartland. And they recognize that they need talent here. Those represent two of the nine companies that are just in Tulsa that do flight simulation technology for both commercial airliners and for the military.
They're doing everything from military jets to the latest, Airbuses and Boeing Dreamliners.
It's amazing. I toured the Flight Safety Broken Arrow facility and, got to step into their flight simulators. They're incredible. And they're actually going to have a smaller scale one at the expo where people can sit down and try their hand at flying one of these commercial jets. So that should be kind of fun.
Now, outside of the simulation, but the gaming business, are there a number of companies here?
There are a number of startups. Oklahoma City right now, I think, is leading the charge on the gaming industry. At last count, I think there's probably five or six companies down there. In the Oklahoma area, we have one big one, Bonozo Apps, who's probably the number one, if you were going to say how much money they generated, number one in the state. And, the owner of that company, Matt Harmon, he's very involved in trying to get this industry going because he recognizes that we need to grow it. It helps him, right? It helps the local economy. It increases his talent pool and his availability to produce bigger and better things.
Now, are most of these companies now, are they jobbers? Are they doing an aspect of a game, or are they doing games from start to completion?
Well, Bonozo App does start to completion. Mm-hmm. So they come up from concept all the way to deployment. We also see some jobbers, as you call them.
Yeah.
So we met a fellow who works for a Dallas-based company doing their programming. We sort of met him through connections, and he lives in the Tulsa area. So it's interesting. Jordan Newman, who's one of our guest speakers, he actually does artwork, 3D models for an online game called Dota 2, and it's totally a jobber kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk a little bit about the Heartland Gaming Expo, which takes place this Saturday and Sunday at the Cox Business Center. Well, how many years have you been doing this now? Is this the second or third year?
This is the third year we've done the event. It's the first time we've kind of really pushed the envelope. So we started small. We wanted to feel comfortable with the core of the event and then to expand out, right, making it available to the public to come out and check out everything that we're doing.
And so this expo is sort of a double track. It's for people who are really already into the gaming and sort of thinking about building games or actually making experimental tries to do some simulation or things like that. But it's also for people who just love games. And it's also great for parents who have that teenager who spends way too much time playing games, and you say, but you're not sure if he's really interested in doing it. You can bring him out there to see the games. He'll have fun, and he'll also be exposed to a lot of designers about a possible career track, too.
Well, what we're trying to do is we're trying to shake the model a little bit of the big producer, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of games are now being produced by little people, and there are a lot of people that are up and coming, and we want to show them the love, so to speak. So we have a lot of students that are coming from all over the state, high school students, college students, even some middle school students who are coming in and they're beginning developers. We have a number of indie teams from Oklahoma. Goldfire Studios is coming in from Oklahoma City. Of course, Bonozo Apps is going to be there. We have a couple up and starting indie companies who they're interested in showing off their product, maybe winning an award for the product and trying to make some sales or get some financial backing. So really there's this competition core, which is really all about advertising these people, right? They are looking for jobs. They're looking to get into industry. We're trying to put on a big show. And then for the spectators, it's a very unique opportunity, very different than something like Comic-Con or E3, where you go and you're so far removed from the people that are the show. Here you talk with them, you play their games, you give them feedback, they talk to you about what they're thinking about doing. So it's a very one-on-one personalized experience in a way that I don't think people are used to.
Will you see games that are under development?
We'll see games that are at the very beginning of development. We will see games that are completely developed.
Okay.
So it runs the whole gamut. So for instance, we know Microsoft is coming. They are going to have vendor tables. They're setting up tutorial events. And these are games that have been produced. And so people will come and they can play them, hang out. We have a tournament, which is called an iDARB tournament. And that's a game. iDARB's a whole story in its own right.
All right.
And it's a funny, fun story, iDARB. And we picked this game particularly because it has a fun story, but also because it's really awesome to play.
And so you have a tournament for just spectators, people who come to the event can enter the tournament? And
actually, we have multiple tournaments going on. So PJ Gamers in Broken Arrow is going to be sponsoring a Magic card tournament on Sunday afternoon. We have the iDARB tournament, which is going on the entire time the expo is happening. There are cash prizes associated with that. And then the Tokyo and Tulsa people have a TNT at HGE event. So within our event is another event. So it's celebrating, it's actually International Tabletop Gaming Day on Saturday, the 11th. And we are actually one of the registered sites for International Tabletop Gaming.
Now, how many people was this drawn in the past 2 years? I mean, last year, it's been going, this is the third year, so how many people were here last year?
Well, again, we didn't advertise last year. We focused on our core group, which was students. So I think we ended up with something like 100 student competitors. Somewhere in the area of maybe 500 people came just to kind of check it out. Mm-hmm. And this was all word of mouth. This year, we've done a much more aggressive marketing campaign.
So you're assuming several thousand people?
We're hoping for 5,000 is what we mm-hmm. would really like to see.
Well, now, in addition to the tournaments and things, you're going to have competitions. And I assume it's in all aspects of gaming, from beginning simulations to composing music for a game. Give us a sense of what these competitions are about.
Well, so the competitions, again, they're a way for the students to kind of showcase. The students, their goal is to try to find work, right? That's mm-hmm. what they're doing. And we're allowing them to show off what they have and to win prizes, right? So they actually win awards. And these range all the way from I have a game design, a game concept, an idea of what the character should be, through basic artwork that would go into game, sound and music effects that are part of games, all the way up to games that have been developed over the course of the year or multiple years by the students. And then finally, we have a 24-hour event, which we call the Code Jam, which is a torture fest.
And what is this? What happens at this Code Jam?
So what will happen is Friday night, I will walk into the room and I will say, you have to build a game and your theme is this, right? Uh-huh. And I'll pick something and I won't reveal what it will be because they're probably listening right now. But we've thought long and hard about what might be a good theme. And so they have 24 hours from start to finish to complete an entire game that they then show off.
A real game, I'm sure this is going to be somewhat rudimentary, but can you get something done in 24 hours like that to get an operational game?
These teams amaze us. And it goes back to a story a long time ago a professor once told me. He says, you know, if I give you 3 months to do a project, I will get approximately 24 hours worth of work. If I give you 24 hours worth of time to do the project, I'll get 24 hours worth of work. And so we actually see games that are remarkably sophisticated given the duration of time. And then we see a set of games where the students, they lean a little bit too far out to pick the apple and they fall off the tree, mm-hmm. right? And
right.
so we have categories of awards. We call it most ambitious. And it's meant to say, you know, we think your idea is great, and we recognize the fact that
the guy was hung up.
Yeah, it was probably
the animation hung up.
Yeah, a little bit too much for you to do in that period of time. Now this year we wanted to involve the crowd into the co-jam. So mm-hmm. used to be with these students, we'd tell them the theme, they'd go lock themselves in a room and hide. And so we introduced what we refer to as the Hunger Games style element to it. And as far as we know, nobody's ever done this. So we will.
So the spectators will be looking over the shoulders from time to time?
Absolutely. So the student teams will be putting up web pages. And what they're going to be trying to do in the same fashion like a crowdfunding person would do is drive traffic to their website to get people to vote for their games. So as they put more information, as their game ideas develop, people should keep coming back in and re-voting. So, you know, you could think of it as American Idol style if you want to.
Now, is this only among the participants at the expo, or is this going to be like remote? I mean, where you have people around the country.
It's all web-based. So yeah. The development teams, we want them to drive as much traffic to their sites as they possibly can. And so if they get 20,000 people and they're coming from China, then great. We're really happy about that because, again, it's teaching them that developers do not build games in a box. They have to be cognizant of what the market wants. And so getting feedback to say people don't like our design or we're not doing putting enough effort into trying to market our game, we want to give that feedback to them.
Yeah. My guest today is Roger Mailer, Associate Professor of Computer Science at the University of Tulsa, and he is also the man behind the Heartland Gaming Expo, which takes place this Saturday and Sunday at the Cox Business Center from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. There'll be a wide range of speakers in every aspect of computer simulation and video games. You mentioned that some of the big aircraft simulators are going to have a simulator there that people can go in and look. It's for people who are actually interested in making gaming and simulation a career, as well as people just into video games and computer simulations. And it takes place this weekend at the Cox Business Center. Now, the University of Tulsa has also recognized that this is a growing industry and that there are a number of startups around the area that are needing really talented engineers. And so I guess the university now has created a degree program in simulation and gaming. How did that come about?
Well, we've been working on this for some time because within the university, and I still read this from parents. Parents come and talk to me and they're like, wow, it's really great that you have this new computer simulation and gaming major, but should I have my kid go into it? And so there was a lot of discussions within the university about whether or not it was an appropriate degree program. And it came down to the recognition that, in fact, we have a lot of strengths at TU for getting people prepared to go into this industry. And
really, the industry has changed to the point where you almost have to specialize, really, to be able to get a competitive job at high echelons of all sorts of computer science organizations, right?
Well, certainly. I mean, within our department, we are now three majors, and the majors are basically specializations. The computer science degree program, which is really programmers, the information technology majors, which do system administration, network layout and management, things of that nature. So dealing more with the hardware and software from a business perspective, and now computer simulation and gaming, which focuses on the intersection between what I would say is art and computer science. So even with simulators, it intersects with art. They have to look realistic in order to be immersive.
So this is, in many cases, a more interactive degree between departments. I mean, so you're working with the art school, I assume, with their graphics department. You're going to be working with music. You're going to be working with English for stories. Music for the music that goes along with video gaming?
The theater department, communications department, all of these departments have been involved in the design of the major and will be involved in how the major progresses as it evolves over time because it is a new degree program. And what we saw was that there were a lot of individual efforts by faculty members to do things that were gaming related. And this is the first step in bringing them together.
Now, give us a sense of where the gaming industry is. I mean, do you have to be the jack of all trades? Do you have to be able to have that artistic side as well as the coding side to create these characters that are attractive to the end user? Do you have to know something about music, or are these likely to become specialized fields in and of themselves?
Well, they have been in the past very specialized.
And what you're trying to do is maybe create a more general knowledge. So I'm a software guy that can talk to the English major, or the writer of the game, and say, this is not plausible, or this is going to be really hard to do, or it's not going to be cost effective, that sort of thing?
Well, what we're hoping to do is avoid that dialogue completely, so that the person who's writing the game design understands what technical limitations are. The people who are putting music inside of the games understand why the track layouts are done and why the looping structure and beat structure is done the way it's done. So what we see in the gaming industry is that teams have a really hard time working together because they've stovepiped. So the music people think music, the designers think designers, coders think coders,
right?
And so they don't understand the process that each other are going through. And the games that are most successful tend to be, they have a manager who comes in and just sort of dictates everything, right? and we've all been there before, I'm sure. But to have a team be more fluid, specifically if they're the smaller teams, you know, the idea that you have small development companies where there may only be five or six people in the company, they all have to take turns. The coders have to do what we call coder art, right? Basic layout art that gives the idea of what to the artist of what they're thinking, right? The artists need to be able to figure out how to do basic animations, how to bring those in the game. So there's some amount of coding and knowledge that goes into that as well.
Mm. And so you're hoping to have these graduates that are able to at least eliminate some of those conflicts that go on in a small technology company where one side doesn't really know what the other side is doing.
It's about rounding our students. That's why we're a university, right? We produce, we're not a technical school. We produce well-rounded individuals. And within gaming, you have to have some understanding of art, some understanding of things like set design, some understanding of how scripts are laid out, some understanding of how to do the programming behind it, the technology.
What's been the reaction of that gaming community in Tulsa already, or in Oklahoma City or around the area, to this degree program?
Well, the people we've run into that have heard of it, they're very excited. And this is part of the Heartland is we're promoting the new gaming major because we want people to know, especially younger people, right? So coming, bringing your children who like to play games, coming to the Heartland Gaming Expo and setting them up for the idea that there is a career pathway for them that makes sense. I mean, there's even a career pathway now where playing games is your career.
Really?
There are people who broadcast online, like PewDiePie, for instance, and this guy pulls in about $3 million a year, and all he does is play games and talks while he's playing the games. there are esports teams for playing, electronic games like League of Legends, or I mentioned Dota. They make money. They have tournaments where they can generate $100,000 by winning this tournament. And we're seeing it leak down now at the college and university levels, where colleges and universities are starting to fund esports teams for competing against other colleges and universities. So
a whole new level for the NCAA.
Well, and the thing about an esports team is it does not require a big, giant stadium, right? And,
that's true.
So you just stick them in a room, throw them in some Mountain Dew and pizza, and they're good.
What about the simulator community? Because that is an important part of our economy. Are they excited about this major?
They were thrilled to hear about it, and we've reached out and talked to them about coming in as advisory board members in an advising capacity. We really want to support them, and I think they've been undersupported. When we spoke to Rick Keithley from SimStar, for instance, he said, well, you know, we spend something like 20% of a year's salary to go out and headhunt one person to come in and help us build our simulation technology. So they're spending huge amounts of money to attract people from out of state to come to Tulsa. And we're spending huge amounts of money at the university shipping our students off to the East and West Coast. And it seems like we can cut out the middleman in this process a little bit.
Yeah. Well, beyond just the aircraft simulation, I assume, are there simulations in just about every industry now?
Well, there's like medical simulations, there's weather simulations, there's physics simulations, mechanical, petroleum engineers use simulations. So you see the virtualization is kind of going across the board. And even new technologies that we're seeing started kind of with the Google Glass, the Microsoft HoloLens. Sony just announced that they're producing a new virtual reality. We're going to see simulations that are occurring as we walk around, augmented reality and virtual reality. It's going to become an integral part of our lives.
Interesting. It's a fascinating future. You can see a little bit out of it at the Heartland Gaming Expo this Saturday and Sunday at the Cox Business Center. How do people get more information?
So you can go to the website, heartlandgamingexpo.com. That's the easiest way to get information. We also have a Facebook page. Last night we hit 3,000 likes. I was sitting watching when it happened, and I sent an email out that said something like, woohoo. You know, we have ticket sales that are going on right now. We will also have ticket sales at the event. The price is very, very reasonable for people wanting to bring their family.
Wish you great luck with it this weekend. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Roger Mailer is an associate professor of computer science at the University of Tulsa, which is presenting the Heartland Gaming Expo, which takes place this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. at the Cox Business Center. For more information, visit heartlandgamingexpo.com. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Connie Cronley.
The title of this commentary is Dodging the Ice Floes. It's inspired by the growing number of people who ask me when I'm going to retire. I suspect the only woman asked that question more often is Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She's 82, and she seems much more patient with the question than I am. Why are people asking me this? Do they want to behave like the ancient Eskimos, put me on an ice floe and push me out to sea? Although locally that wouldn't be fatal. Push my ice floe down the Arkansas River at low tide and it wouldn't be death, but only be a soggy annoyance. Ask me, when are you going to retire? And I try to keep a civil tongue in my mouth. But what I'm thinking is, why do you ask that? Do I look feeble? Am I not doing my job? Are you worried about your own retirement? Are you longing for your own retirement? Why not ask me other significant questions like, have you bought your burial plot? Have you chosen your assisted living home? Elizabeth Taylor said one day she woke up and called a friend in a panic, saying, I'm blind, I've gone blind. Turns out she'd been slightly drunk the night before, fell asleep in her makeup, and awoke with her eyelids stuck shut. One recent morning, I half awoke thinking, I'm deaf, but it turns out the radio volume was just too low. Supreme Court Justice Ginsburg was born in March and is a Piscean. Pisces are usually polite people, so when Justice Ginsburg is asked about her retirement, she replies evasively and politely, I can learn that from her. I have a special admiration for older English actresses such as Maggie Smith. I saw her recent performance in the second best exotic Marigot Hotel. In one scene, a young colleague looks in on her lying in bed and is afraid she's died. He asks, Madam? Without opening her eyes, she replies, piss off. I will learn from her, too. I have ordered a Ruth Bader Ginsburg coffee cup. Every morning I will see it, and when I'm asked when I'm going to retire, I will answer evasively and politely, but I'll channel Maggie Smith.
Connie Cronley is a freelance writer, the executive director of the Iron Gate Mission, and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.